This podcast was recorded Thursday, February 10th at 10:47 a.m. Things may have changed by the time you hear this.
Yeah, like we'll name a few more things after the Cincinnati Bengals.
I don't think there's anything left.
Not really. Maybe it'll help them sell out some games next year.
I hope they
That'd
win,
be
though.
A first. Let's talk politics. This is Snollig Oster, WOSU Public Media's weekly look at Ohio politics and all those shrewd Snollig Osters who are racing to buy their Bengals gear this week. I'm Steve Brown.
And I'm Mike Thompson. They are racing to buy their Bengals gear. See a lot more Houday signs and Bengals hats
sure
around.
Do.
That's great.
It is great.
We'll get right to our topic this week. It is a topic that has consumed the State House and Columbus for months. And as of right now, it does not look like it's going to be resolved anytime soon.
We are not talking about chicken wing recipes for Sunday. We are talking about redistricting, the process by which lawmakers draw districts for state legislators and Ohio members of Congress. It can seem a little boring at times, but it is really one of the most important parts of politics.
Yes, it is. And in the past week, the Ohio Supreme Court rejected the Redistricting Commission's second attempt at drawing a map for Ohio House and Senate districts. The court said the commission once again failed to create a map that reflects the state's political division.
And it was once again a 4-3 ruling with Chief Justice Maureen O'Connor providing the swing vote. The majority opinion said the commission chose to change the first rejected map as little as possible to preserve as much political partisan favoritism as they could salvage from the first invalidated map. The court gave the commission until February 17th to come up with another map.
And as if the Redistricting Commission did not have enough to do, state lawmakers said, you know what, we can't draw the congressional map to satisfy the Supreme Court, so you give it a try. And as the Constitution allows, lawmakers assign the congressional map-making chore to the Redistricting Commission. The good news is the commission now has an extra month to draw that congressional map.
I'm sure that'll solve all the problems. So where does this leave us? In limbo, honestly. Ohio's primary now only 12 weeks away. It's become pretty clear the maps must have a mix of legislative districts that match Ohio's patterns of 54% Republican to 46% Democrat.
So the question we have is, what happens if the commission, that is, state lawmakers, decide to ignore or refuse to comply with the Ohio Supreme Court's orders?
To help answer that question, or at least to try, we are joined by OSU law professor and great friend of Snollig Oster, Ned Foley. Ned, welcome back to Snollig Oster.
It's great to be with you guys.
So what do you make of this battle of the wills between Republican leaders at the State House and the Ohio Supreme Court?
Oh, it's a mess. We were talking about it in my election law class this week, actually, and one student correctly described it as a game of chicken between the two sides. I mean, it's like, who's going to blink first? And It's ugly. Another student said it reminded them of the DeRolf litigation over school funding, if you remember that from years back. Different subject, but some of the same institutional dynamics in terms of tug of war between the legislature and the court.
Yeah, we'll get to that in a moment, because I think that is an apt comparison. It could be anyway. But do you read these decisions like we do, in particular the opinion of Chief Justice O'Connor that she has drawn a line? And that line separates the legislature and congressional delegation 54-46. And she's told the lawmakers, and the majority opinion has told lawmakers, you need to meet that.
Yeah, I don't know that I see it quite that clearly. I understand why you say that. But you know, one of the things, again, we were talking about in class, because it's genuinely confusing to us as attorneys and people training to be attorneys, is whether something that is less extreme in terms of the gerrymander that was sent to the court could satisfy the judicial standard. Again, this is so complicated because you've got the state legislative maps versus the congressional maps, two different parts of the state constitution. You know, I've never seen anything quite as chaotic as what's going on right now.
Do you think there is any merit to the Republican arguments that they are doing their best? I mean, I think, to be honest, you have to suspend common sense a little bit at times to think that they can't draw a map that matches Ohio's political dynamic. But do you think they have legal standing here? Do you think that you know, is there anything to their game of chicken, if you will?
Well, no, in the sense, I mean, you know, these were 4-3 decisions from the Ohio Supreme Court. So they were able to get three votes, just not the crucial fourth. You know, they were hoping that the Ohio Supreme Court would act the way the U.S. Supreme Court did in the North Carolina case from a couple of years ago and basically say, as a court, we're just going to stay out of politics. That's not what the Ohio Supreme Court majority has said. And I do agree with you that the majority, including Chief Justice O'Connor, is emphatic that they are not relinquishing their role. They will retain oversight and will insist on compliance with the constitutional standard. So in that sense, I think the legislature will lose the game of chicken. I just don't know that that all four justices will be quite as aggressive in the standard as maybe they might be.
Let's pick up on that and find out what is next in this game of chicken. What could happen here is the commission says, okay, we hear you. We'll draw a map that is completely fair. It does not offer either party an outsized advantage, and it keeps communities whole. But that's unlikely. I think that's a fair bet. What is more likely is the commission will tweak the current versions, maintain the GOP advantage, and hope the court okays it. What happens if the court rejects Ned Foley? What happens if the court rejects map number three? Let's look at the state map first.
Oh, well, that's really hard to think through because the constitutional provision that's part of the new system specifically says that the court can't draw its own maps. It can only send it back, you know, to either the legislature or the commission to do it. And so, you know, the game of chicken on that side is a little bit more complicated, I think, and potentially runs the risk of the date for the primary being moved. And, you know, it could end up in federal court, believe it or not, as we're trying to game this all out, because the reason why we're doing redistricting now, as you know, is that every 10 years with new census data, there's an obligation to draw new maps for equal population purposes. So it would violate the federal constitution for the legislature to say, well, hey, we're just not going to draw a map that meets the Ohio Supreme Court standard, and we're happy to rely on the old map. That's not an option in this context, because you could go to federal court, and the federal court could take over drawing the lines if absolutely necessary.
You know, I thought the Supreme Court decision you mentioned earlier, the one out of North Carolina, they said, we're not going to get involved in, the court shouldn't be involved in drawing maps and in political gerrymandering. Voting rights acts are different, but, you know, the actual political drawing of maps, you know, they basically punted back to the states, I guess.
Good question. This is why students in my class are like, you know, ready to, you know, throw their pencils in the air, so to speak,
because them and Ohio voters.
So in that North Carolina case, the premise of that North Carolina case was that districts were in compliance with the one person, one vote, equal population standard that goes all the way back to the 1960s in a case is called Baker versus Karen, Reynolds versus Sims from the liberal Warren Court era. And the extra thing that the plaintiffs in North Carolina wanted was that equal population is not good enough, that this partisan fairness that we've been talking about, you know, for the last few minutes is an extra constitutional requirement. It was that claim that the U.S. Supreme Court rejected for the federal constitution. But if Ohio has no new map, then it's not just an issue of partisan fairness, it's an issue of equal population, and the federal courts do still exist to police that line.
Oh, goody. More court battles go from the state to the federal.
I mean, Ned, in journalism, we like shorthand. Would you say we are at or near a constitutional crisis?
Constitutional chaos, yeah. I'd prefer than constitutional crisis. I do think this cycle, Ohio in particular, but if you look nationwide, it is embarrassing how poorly as a society we handle this basic function, which is to create new maps to actually hold elections, right? This is sort of the first thing that you have to do to have a government. And the fact that we are so arbitrary and again, almost irrational in terms of, because we don't know the calendar, we don't, the process seems so confusing. it does make us look bad in terms of just the capacity of self-government, unfortunately.
Well, there's just too much money at stake. I mean, it should be common sense, right, to draw maps that reflect what your state looks like, but there's no interest in by Republicans
or Democrats to in do other so. States.
Right. I mean, there's no – why would Republicans intentionally give up power? I mean, it just – right? I mean, why would they do that? They would never willingly do that.
It comes down to the fact that lawmakers get to draw their own districts.
Yeah.
That's what it comes
down
to.
No, yeah, of course.
So, yeah, I mean, I get, you know, one thing is, and we've talked about this before, I think, you know, Ohio, in drawing these new commissions, did not adopt the model of the really independent commissions.
Like the Michigan model.
Yeah.
Exactly. And so, you know, are people going to look back and say, we understand why Ohio tried this alternative, but this was really not a successful way to do it? And will that push us, you know, for the next time around, you know, another decade or so to look at that other model?
Yeah, this is a bit embarrassing right now, as you've said, but in a way the system is working, right? I mean, the court, at least for now, has held up what they've seen as gerrymandered maps. They have served as another check and balance on the legislature.
Yeah, no, that's true. And I suppose if the primary date holds, and in response to this week's order, and the legislature gets the message and says, okay, look, we fought the good fight, but we've got to come up in a timely way with maps that are compliant, then I guess you could say the system's working. But the premise, I think, of Mike's question was that doesn't seem particularly realistic in terms of the politics of the situation. You'd like to think that isn't that the why these constitutional amendments were adopted, was we saw what redistricting was in Ohio. It was too partisan, too aggressive. And this was to be put in place to put some sort of check on the process. But the politicians don't seem to be getting that message.
Yeah, at least not yet anyway. I want to get back to the drawing of the maps. There are folks on the voting rights side who believe that the Supreme Court could draw the maps, at least because they maintain that the Supreme Court has jurisdiction over this issue. You disagree. You don't think the court can actually draw the maps themselves.
Well, I think there's a difference between the congressional map and the state legislative maps on this. You know, the language of the two different parts of the Constitution that were adopted in these, you know, two different ballot measures at different times prior to this round of redistricting are slightly different in this regard. And again, this is uncharted waters because mm-hmm. it's the first time going through it. But it's just, I read the language in the Ohio Constitution now, the court-drawn maps, at least from the Ohio Supreme Court, are kind of off limits for the state house maps. But I don't see the same equivalent provision with respect to the congressional maps.
Well, that's ironic. They could draw the federal government's maps, but they couldn't draw the state government's maps, that they being the Ohio Supreme Court, which is another ironic twist in this, if that is, in fact, is how the courts read this.
Yeah, well, and I may be, you know, again, this is new enough that I'm missing something, but and it doesn't, again, it's part of the head-scratching irrationality of all of this, but that does seem to be the technical difference in language. And as you know, the reason why we have these two different procedures is because they were adopted at different times, and because the politics around drawing maps was different. I mean, in other words, for reasons that, you know, I think went back to Speaker Boehner, right? That there was a goal to keep the congressional maps separate from the state house maps in yeah. terms of the procedures.
Yeah.
Ned, you've talked a couple times about the possibility of moving the primary. Senate President Matt Huffman did float that idea this week. He thinks that the one possibility would be to delay the primary, or split it into two, to delay the primaries for congressional and legislative races, and then still have local and statewide races on the May 3rd primary. Do you think that's realistic, or do you think the entire primary will or could get delayed, or where do you come down on that?
I mean, I do think it's realistic to delay. I mean, I think it's a question of cost and administrative feasibility to have two different primaries instead of one. You know, some states do that as a matter of course, particularly in presidential years. They like to have their presidential primary at a different time than other races. And if I'm not mistaken, Ohio has done that, you know, at least at some point. So, you know, there wouldn't be any constitutional objection to having two different primaries. It just You know, local election officials may say, you're giving us twice as much work, or you're going to give twice as much dollars to pay for all of this.
Yeah. At the start of this conversation, you mentioned the DeRolf decision. Could you see a scenario where the maps are put into place without the court's approval? Because, after all, we have had an unconstitutional public school funding system for 2 decades, and nothing has been done to stop that. If we can do that for 20 years, they can run an election without Supreme Court's approval, right?
Well, you know, again, I have students and I were contemplating that we came to the conclusion that DeRolf was different because of tax dollars. In other words, the problem there, the Supreme Court wanted to say to the legislature, you're obligated to increase funding. But in order to make that effective, they would have had to actually raise taxes. And there just isn't in America the tradition of court-ordered taxation. That's like taxation without representation. I think drawing maps is a little bit different. You know, I think that here the power dynamics are more with the court. Mm-hmm. Whether the court can draw the map itself or not, I think it can insist that there be maps that are compliant with the court standards, and that will ultimately stick. And again, that may mean that the primary date has to slip. The federal courts may also have to get into the act, but it feels to me like the legislature is ultimately going to lose this fight at least this year. But because it's a 4-3 decision of the court, it would just take one change in court membership, you know, down the road. And these are 4-year maps under the whole complicated procedure, not 10-year maps. And, you know, I haven't looked out at who's up in what years for different seats on the Ohio Supreme Court, but, you know, at least you have to ask the question whether the court, if the court can get its way this year for this map, whether, again, 4 years from now, 6 years from now, the court will end up prevailing or not.
Yeah, 2 current members are running for Chief Justice, and Pat DeWine is up for re-election again. So you have to assume there'll be a vacancy after this election, and then Pat DeWine, his seat is certainly up.
There are so many layers to this onion here, but ultimately, if lawmakers or whoever does this would just draw fair districts, this would all be avoided. I mean, I know it sounds so optimistic and altruistic, right? But I mean, just if we could just have districts that match what the state looks. I'm not asking. I don't think Democrats are asking. In this case, they're not asking for control. They're just asking for, you know, it's the same as what Republicans argue in Illinois and states like that. They just want districts that look like the state.
But Democrats would be if that were to happen. If we were to have completely fair districts, mm-hmm. Democrats would suffer as well. Joyce Beatty would be in a more competitive district.
Yeah.
Other Democrats in the Cleveland area would be in more competitive districts. But it can be done.
So take it out of lawmakers' hands. Mm-hmm. I mean, it'll never be totally apolitical.
At least not for the next 10 years.
Anyway, Ned Foley, Ohio State University law professor, joining us to talk about the continued drama over redistricting in Ohio. I don't know if it'll ever go away, but Ned, thank you again for your expertise. Great to have you back on Snollygoster.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
Thank you, Ned.
We'll be right back.
Support for WOSU Podcasts comes from listeners. You can give at WOSU.org. Thank you for supporting digital content from WOSU Public Media.
Welcome back to Snollygoster. We should give Ned Foley a plug here. He's got his own podcast. It is called Free and Fair with Franita and Foley. It's a political podcast about fair elections and free elections. It's on a bit of a hiatus right now, but they intend to start producing new episodes as the midterm elections approach. So be on the lookout for Free and Fair with Franita and Foley, wherever you get your podcast.
It's a lot to say. Time now for our Snollygoster of the Week award. We give it out every week to the shrewdest politician or political move of the week. And this week it goes to an old friend, Georgia Congresswoman Marjorie Taylor Greene.
We've honored her before. No, it wasn't her denial of the 2020 election results this time or amplifying false claims about COVID protocols. It was over soup.
Taylor Greene went viral when she tweeted, quote, not only do we have the D.C. jail, which is the D.C. gulag, but now we have Nancy Pelosi's gazpacho police spying on members of Congress, spying on the legislative work that we do, spying on our staff, and spying on American citizens.
Gazpacho, as in that delicious, cold, tomato-based soup. We have to assume she meant Gestapo, which is a little more problematic since it compares Pelosi to Nazi Germany. But mostly it's just hilarious on so many levels.
It really is so dumb. And of course, the internet did its thing.
Not so for you!
With retweets about soup Nazis, Taylor Greene needing to take stock, and revenge being a dish best served cold.
You know, gazpacho is a Spanish soup.
Mm-hmm.
It's also lost them. Nancy Pelosi is Italian, a proud Italian-American, so she even got the nationality of the soup wrong. Anyway, so Marjorie Taylor Greene for trying to compare Nancy Pelosi to Nazi Germany, but instead getting served a big cold bowl of karma. You are our Snollygoster of the week.
Now I just want some gazpacho because that sounds good. That will do it for this week's edition of Snollygoster. If you have a suggestion for next week's Snollygoster of the week, you can email it to snollygoster@wosu.org. As always, please leave us a good review on iTunes or wherever else you get your podcasts, and just tell your friends about us. For our audio producer, Eric French, and our web producer, Michael DeBonis, I'm Steve Brown.
And I'm Mike Thompson for Snollygoster from WOSU Public Media.
Back it up. No more soup for you.
No!